Hello and welcome to the Defense Tech Podcast. I'm Civilian Sydney. Now you may be wondering, if she's a civilian, is she some sort of tech expert? No, I'm neither a government or a tech expert, just a curious civilian who likes to talk with experts about the best and brightest in the defense tech industry. We're in the middle of our DoD Critical series, where I'm sitting down with the hubs of Microelectronics Commons to discuss their expertise in critical tech areas and their plan for innovating the semiconductor industry in the U.S. We are on the fourth episode, and today I'm talking with Fred Kish and John Muth from the Commercial Leap Ahead for Wide Band Gap Semiconductors, or CLAWS, hub. We discuss, you guessed it, Commercial Leap Ahead technologies. Fred Kish is a renowned engineer who has made significant contributions to the field of optoelectronics, particularly in the development of high-performance LEDs and integrated photonic circuits. His groundbreaking research has led to the commercialization of numerous products, generating billions of dollars in revenue and revolutionizing the telecommunications industry. He is currently a distinguished professor and NNF director at North Carolina State University. John Muth is also a distinguished professor at North Carolina State University, and he specializes in wide bandgap semiconductors and their applications in various technologies, including LEDs, lasers, and power electronics. His research has led to significant advancements in these fields, and he has also made valuable contributions to national security and the entrepreneurial ecosystem. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the episode.
All right. So hello, John and Fred. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I'm so excited to learn more about both of you and about the CLAWS Hub and all that it has to offer. Could you start by telling us a little bit about yourselves and your experience in the defense tech industry?
So I'm John Muth. I'm a professor at North Carolina State University. I actually started my career as a naval officer on submarines. And in the course of doing that, you know, I got to go on deployments. I got to take a submarine and put it back together in a shipyard. You know, this was back in the Cold War era. After I left the Navy, I got a PhD in physics. And while in graduate school, I got interested in the area of wide band gap semiconductors. And that area has turned out to be very important for national defense and also for economic security of the United States. These wide band gap semiconductors connect to lots of applications that are related to power efficiency, high power, high frequency, things that can go into radars or directed energy weapons, but also electric vehicles or, you know, other things that are important for quality of life. Along the way, as a university professor, I've had the opportunity to start a small company. I've had the opportunity to work with other companies that have made semiconductor products and partly understanding how to pull together an ecosystem where you can have academia, government, and universities working together. Was something that I got pulled into as my career progressed. So I helped start a center for wearable electronics. That was partly driven by my experiences in Iraq, where I was very interested in how people got stressed out and how they worked in extreme environments and, you know, how could the soldier work better in those types of environments. But also, if you look at the medical applications, then after that, I got involved in Power America, which was a Department of Energy program looking at power electronics using the wide band gap semiconductors for some of the applications I mentioned earlier, but also the power grid and things like that. And that was an industry, government, university consortium. And then now with this CLAWS program, we've got a great opportunity to, again, kind of pull academia, universities, and industry together. Look at how to take these wide band gap semiconductors and put them into new applications, how to do things that haven't been done before, but also things that are very valuable both to the defense industry and to the commercial industry.
Well, that's fascinating. I feel like you could write a book about your career. Very cool. All right. How about you, Fred?
Hi, I'm Fred Kish, and I'm Deputy Director of the CLAWS Hub. I'm a professor at NC State in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering, and I'm also director of our nanofabrication facility here at NC State. Prior to joining NC State, I was in industry for 27 years. In industry, Had a number of interactions with the DOD. One of the key ones, I think, was helping to be a catalyst in the formation of AIM Photonics, which is a national manufacturing institute focused on photonic integrated circuits. I was part of the inaugural board there, and at my previous company, Infinera, we stood up a toolkit for indium phosphide photonic integrated circuits as part of AIM Photonics. I came to NC State about 5 years ago, and John and I have been working together to realize the concept that we had of what we call a research foundry, and that is what we're doing in the CLAWS Hub with a focus on wide bandgap semiconductors. And we really think that this is a new potential prototypical way to do next generation research in semiconductors.
Cool, great. Thank you so much for sharing. So as you just mentioned, you two are the hub leads for the Commercial Leap Ahead for Wide Bandgap Semiconductors Hub. So this is one of the 8 hubs awarded under Microelectronics Commons that was awarded last year in 2023. Could you tell us a little more about your hub and how it was formed?
Well, the CLAWS Hub, Commercial Leap Ahead for Wide Bandgap Semiconductors, grew out of an idea that Fred and I had been working on for a while, this concept of research foundry. And that idea was that traditionally academic foundries have not had strong process control or have not had the ability to do things that you would consider being in a manufacturing environment. Now, the reasons that we were interested in this, part of it's Fred's great experience in taking foundries from kind of the ground floor, you know, PowerPoint presentation all the way to successful commercial products. So we had, you know, that kind of history and backing. But also on my side, working within academia, you know, I see students and professors and small companies trying to reinvent the wheel each time, coming in mm-hmm. and trying to make a new process starting from scratch. And or I look at researchers who are trying to make circuits out of the wide bandgap semiconductors and them not having availability of the new materials or of the new devices or things like that. So from an ecosystem perspective, Fred and I had put forward to National Science Foundation a research foundry concept where we would try to fix some of these, what we viewed as systemic problems. And then that was before the CHIPS Act, and we were viewed as being a little bit too expensive for National Science Foundation at the time. Mm-hmm. We made it kind of to the finals, and the long story short was that we weren't able to implement that idea with the National Science Foundation, but we were very well prepared that when this opportunity mm-hmm. came up with the Department of Defense and when the CHIPS Act and some of the things that we had been thinking about, the priority had been raised by the country in terms of wanting to compete more effectively with China, that we kind of had a plan where we could focus very strongly on wide bandgap semiconductors and meet kind of specific goals to solve these kinds of specific issues to kind of accelerate R&D of these materials. Fred, would you like to comment, add?
Yeah, no, I think the only thing that I would add to that is, you know, one of the key benefits, as you said, is not reinventing the wheel. So what we seek to do in a research foundry is have an underlying set of capabilities, not just at the process, but full integrated device flows and circuit flows that can be modified at the individual process level, what we call process block, so processes that work together, or full flow, and that we know those processes well enough in advance that if you vary them, at least within a reasonable degree, you can predict their outcome, which is a much harder task to do than what's done in most foundries. So it requires a much deeper understanding. With that capability, we then have a platform that researchers can come in on and innovate in the area that they think is most impactful and not have to maintain the full underlying process. And that then gives people the ability to focus on the area they want to innovate, and they can rely upon the rest being controlled and predictable. And we're also then flexible enough to even go in areas where we don't understand necessarily a priori what the output would be, but we allow that flexibility within the foundry. And with that, we think we provide the most capability for researchers to come in and really use and do what they're best at in the area that they're best at. So we think that this ultimately leads to more efficient research, faster learning cycles, and as well as a key metric has been highlighted in the ME Commons, which is a substantial reduction in time from lab to fab, or from the research and development area to the pilot and manufacturing arena. And that's because we're starting with a process capability that is controlled and monitored and maintained. And that's done in many ways like you would already do in a commercial sense. And that really reduces things like time to transfer, time to volume, time to yield.
Great. Yeah, that makes sense. So you really just kind of dove into your hub's mission and what you're getting after. But if you could describe it in a couple words or maybe like a tagline, what would you say the Claws hub mission is?
Well, I think it's really to maintain U.S. leadership in wideband gap semiconductors. We're fortunate at NC State that we've had a lot of technologies developed here that led to wideband gap semiconductor companies and industry. That's actually another key part of our lab to fab model, is that by working very closely with industry, we have that ability to kind of transfer the technologies from the lab to the fab. And then that's a key metric. And so, the processes that are being used in industry are things that we can institute at the, lab here. The things that we're developing in the lab here can be transferred into industry. It's a very, very competitive world. There's a lot of pressures from China and Europe and Asia where they also want to excel in wideband gap semiconductors. We're very good in the U.S., and this type of program, working with our industry partners here in the U.S., can really, make a difference.
So as the name implies, your hub is focused on the commercial leap ahead tech area. So what would you say your hub specifically brings to the table for this tech area, maybe opposed to some of the other hubs?
Well, I think that our hub is very, very focused, and that focus on wideband gap semiconductor may seem narrow, but we have the ability with that to be able to excel and work with world-class companies. We have five different areas: silicon carbide, we have Coherent and General Electric or GE Aerospace working with us. With the three nitride RF, we have MACOM, which is a world-class company, and we also have local partnerships in the area with Wolfspeed. If we take a look at our three nitride power effort, we also work with companies like MACOM, Lockheed Martin, EPC Space, and others. And then three nitride photonics, working with Blue Glass. A final area is in ultra wideband gap semiconductors, where we work with emerging materials like gallium oxide with Kaima Technologies, and then making devices out of diamond, which is an area where Coherent has existing expertise. So if you take a look at that focus and kind of the application spaces that grow out of it, and how we've constructed a supply chain approach where we can go from the leaders who are making the wafers and the epitaxy to the experts that are making the devices and can produce those devices at volume, understanding how to package and build those devices into circuits, bringing all that together positions us very uniquely to be able to tackle some tough problems for the Department of Defense, but also problems that connect very well to the commercial sector. In some areas, this commercial sector is taking off, and it's actually hard to do research in certain niche areas that are important, say for Department of Defense, or important for, say, high voltage power applications. So with our approach, we can kind of pick and choose and target high value niche applications and solve very specific problems.
And the thing I would add to that is our foundational partners are, we think all, amongst the top one or two companies in the world in their areas. And we really worked to identify and build that team to work together in a very tight-knit way. So we have a foundational, very strong but small partnership, because candidly, building semiconductors requires a lot of intimate, detailed work. And to do that in a large distributed manner is a, we think, a challenge that is maybe not the best way to approach it. So we really focused on having that core foundational, world-class, albeit small partnerships that can integrate together. And then we look to then build a user base or other people that can contribute on top of that foundation on top of that. And we think that that foundation is really what is core to that research foundry concept. It really differentiates us from a lot of hubs.
Right. Absolutely. Well said. So I'd love to hear about the projects that Claus was awarded recently in the first round of project awards under Commons. Would you be able to give me a brief summary of some of these projects?
Sure. We have four projects. We have two projects that are related to high frequency devices, RF devices that are made out of material gallium nitride. The one project is directed at looking at how to make those devices work better in avionics systems and in satellites and in radiation environments. And what we are doing is taking processes and wafers that are being commercially manufactured with our partners, taking those to the research foundry lab, and then inserting special layers of materials where we can have the result of making them more radiation hard and reduce electric fields in certain places in the devices, and then complete the process flow so that these devices will be more radiation resistant. That's a partnership and a strength where you've got that industry university interaction, but the national labs are also an important part of that, with Sandia also participating and being able to produce the layers, and then NASA helping us with the space and radiation type testing.
Oh, cool.
And so, you know, again, this ecosystem and being able to bring things together is an example of one project for radiation hardness of RF devices. The other RF project is looking at increasing the capability by using a slightly different composition of materials within the devices. That's a emerging growing area in the area of wide band gap semiconductors. That takes special talents. It took a lot of research at one of the national labs, taking that out of the lab and moving it into a commercial environment. Lets us try to make those devices a little bit different with this new capability. But there's a lot of work to be able to make sure that those devices can work at the higher frequencies that we desire, be able to not suffer certain problems that we have to avoid to be able to have those devices work well. And so that's another RF gallium nitride project. The third and fourth projects are related to high voltage devices. With Coherent and GE Aerospace, we're making devices that work at 6.5 and 10 kilovolts. So if you think about your wall voltage, that's at about 120 volts. And if you think about the highest voltages in your electric vehicles, those are maybe around 1700 volts for some of the new electric vehicles. So these devices are operating at what you might consider extreme voltages, but can be very important for systems that are related to the power grid or to microgrids or to the shipboard buses on submarines and ships or directed energy type weapons. And the advantage of this project with Coherent and GE Aerospace is not just trying to make the usual planar type devices, but making a new class of devices that are called superjunctions, where our partners really are leaders in that area. The final project is also a high voltage project. In that case, the new material, gallium oxide, has some advantages over silicon carbide, in that thinner layers could be make potentially higher voltage devices, and potentially devices could be a lot cheaper. But it's an earlier technology. There's a lot of work to be done. There's a fundamental problem with gallium oxide in that it doesn't conduct heat as well. So in this project, we're going to demonstrate 6.5 and 10 kilovolt devices using these this new material, but also have some new techniques to be able to remove the heat from those devices, which would allow them to be used in conventional systems. Again, you know, it's partly our partnerships and leaderships that we have with our other companies and universities that is really making this work.
Okay, I have a question, and apologies if I should know this already, but your hub members and the organizations that are leading these projects, are they doing this research and this work like on site, or do you have partners with laboratories where they go and do the work? How does that work with the projects?
We have a hub and core model, and depending on the individual project, we have different concentrations of expertise either here at NC State in the Research Foundry or at the companies. And so for the 3-nitride devices, a lot of that work can be done here at NC State. For silicon carbide, we often work outside of NC State, although we have capability here as well. And so it depends on project by project.
Okay. Do you two ever get a chance to get in the lab?
Not as much as we would like sometimes, I think.
Yeah,
but this program is also very rewarding because we have education and workforce development components. And that lets us, you know, not only interact with our PhD students and undergraduates as we normally would do as a professor, but, you know, we build out programs that we can work with community colleges, and we're building out programs where we have K-12 events and stuff like that. So we still get to interact with people of all types, and we get to do all kinds of fun experiments, especially with the middle school and high schoolers, as well as do the, you know, kind of tough, hard science experiments in the university labs.
John is pretty modest. He's also very hands-on, and you can find him in the lab often, even on weekends and things like that as well. So.
Oh, cool. And you brought up the aspect of workforce development. I'd like to talk about that a little more. Why do you think the Commons program has made this such a large aspect of the efforts?
So if you take a kind of historical perspective on things and you go back to the 1980s, you had a lot of people wanting to get into electrical engineering because of computers and computer chip design and things like that. And over the years, you know, we've had a lot of technologies kind of go overseas. And as that happened, a lot of foundries and a lot of the ability to make chips went overseas. And so we have a little bit of a gap in the workforce where what we need to do as a country is we bring these technologies back to the United States, is that we also need to have the people who understand the technologies, understand how to build out the fab, how to make the chips. And I'd say it's not just about people in bunny suits working in clean rooms, but you also have to have the people that are able to design the chips and be able to set out those designs and work. And then you have to have the people who can take the chips and can build them into circuits and that type of thing as well. So we're short on people, and there's a lack of awareness that these are very good jobs, and there's a lack of awareness that there's a lot of opportunity here. So that's maybe a long rambling way of saying that you know, we have a lot to offer people career-wise. Fred, you've got a lot of industry experience. How do you view the needs?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things, as you said, is a real lack of awareness, right? You know, I think we've evolved over time where, you know, there's a lot of interest in, you know, things that are, you know, not very hardware centric, right? In that way. And because that is viewed as, you know, where it's maybe easiest to, you know, have, you know, really good jobs and good careers. But I think, you know, because we've offshored a lot of this capability, we've really lost that awareness. And, you know, what semiconductors provides is really a pretty amazing fusion of different disciplines, you know, from materials to electrical engineering to chemistry to physics to computer science. And so there's, you know, there's room for, you know, people with deep expertise or broad mm-hmm. expertise or both across, you know, many different types of jobs like John described. And, you know, that really creates, I think, a pretty fertile ground for people to, from various different capabilities and interests to come in, and a very fertile ground for innovation and opportunity. But we have to mm-hmm. rebuild that capability here because you need a sufficient infrastructure to be able to do that. You can't do that all on your own, per se. And that's why we think, you know, part of what we're doing in, you know, the Microelectronics Commons and in, you know, rebooting semiconductors in the U.S. is so important for those opportunities.
Yeah, definitely laying the foundation so that when the tech is developed, you can actually get it made.
Yeah, well, it takes an ecosystem, right? If you don't have mm-hmm. the ecosystem of everything from, you know, capability, from the infrastructure, from all the supporting infrastructure, from the, you know, people, the know-how, and it's, you know, at all across all those different disciplines. And so once you lose that ecosystem, it's a big job to get it back. And that's, you know, what I think our mission is on this.
Yeah, we work quite closely with economic development agencies here in North Carolina and with industry. You know, Wolfspeed has been expanding. We've worked with them on workforce development. They have about 1,800 jobs that they need to fill over the next few years. And then I'd also like to point out that, as Fred mentioned, these jobs can be kind of varied. You know, there's a wide variety of technologies. There's a high level of automation in some of this. So, you know, we need people that understand how to operate the machines, people who can repair the robots. You've got, you know, a variety of chemicals and different streams of gases. And there's so people have to know chemistry. There's mechanical engineering problems. So it's very interdisciplinary when you try to bring a whole bunch of different technologies together to make these semiconductor chips.
So the technology that you're working on developing in the Claws Hub, just kind of thinking about the broad overall Commons mission, and you did touch on this a little bit, but kind of in terms that maybe I can understand, how is this technology going to directly help with the re-onshoring effort of microelectronics manufacturing capabilities in the U.S.?
Well, I think we cover a wide variety of bases here. The education workforce development sustains, that's not wide band gap semiconductors, but ME Commons wide, you know, we're helping educate the, you know, the future people that are going to carry us forward in a wide range of semiconductor type technologies. And so that's, I think, a tremendous long-term investment. If you think about the technologies that we're specifically working on, some of it, as I mentioned before, is making sure that the technologies are accessible both in terms of being relatively quickly and also being affordable. So as one example, we've been able to take a technology that has been in Europe and be able to bring that technology to the United States. And now people can work with our industry partners. And if they want to use that technology, they no longer have to work with the people in Europe. We have another technology where some of the materials are made in Japan, but the work with the, we're doing with one of the companies is built that relationship where they're looking at being able to have that technology being available here. So there's those kinds of things. More generally, though, a lot of our wide band gap technologies really have been invented here, you know, in California, maybe at UCSB, here at North Carolina State. So with the spin outs of companies like Cree and Wolfspeed and those kinds of things. And some of us U.S. investment is in the area of wide band gap semiconductors is really helping us maintain that lead and making sure that we've got the ability to manufacture and outcompete the rest of the world in this particular area, which is particularly important because of some of the applications and the rapid market growth. Maybe one thing that I could add on top of that is, you know, we can kind of get locked in on what the present technologies are. But if you look at the future technologies like artificial intelligence, and if you look at photonics, or if you look at quantum, things like that, the technologies that we're working on, you know, kind of fuel these emerging areas. So if you look at like the energy costs of artificial intelligence, we can use wide band gap semiconductors to greatly reduce that. Or if you look at the next generation of supercomputers, you need to be able to transfer information within the computer extremely rapidly. And so some of the innovative work that Fred and other professors here at NC State are doing are extremely high bandwidth communications to allow information to go from one chip to another chip using light instead of electricity. And so, you know, I think another thing about the ME Commons and the way that they've segmented out the different areas is that a lot of the work that we're doing can also impact these important future areas that are emerging.
Yeah, great. Well said. So that's about all the questions that I have. Is there anything else that I missed or that you would like to highlight about your hub?
I think we just maybe would like to highlight that, you know, the that we really view this as a very important program and really are appreciative of all of the support from and candidly the vision from DoD in implementing this program and the way that it's been implemented to really be able to move fast and give us the flexibility to stand things up to fulfill all these needs that we've been talked about. So it's really been a great partnership and I think we're off to a great start and very appreciative of the vision and the support.
Cool. So if someone were to want to get connected with the CLAWS Hub, what would be the best way that they could get in touch or get connected?
Well, we have a CLAWS website, claws@ncsu.edu, and that's definitely one way. Certainly, the Microelectronics Commons website also has ways to link with us. And then both Fred and I are in the book, so to speak. You can find us on the North Carolina State website.
And John's home address, by the way, is
And we are looking for expanding our opportunities. Part of our strategy has been to have a core group of, you know, world-class professionals. But as we build out this program, we've grown from a small number you know, of under 10 kind of partners to now we're well over 20, and we have interactions with probably about 100 companies and organizations in terms of having, you know, discussions and interactions with them.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of opportunity there. Great. Well, thank you both so much for coming on. learned a lot. Thank you for letting me say my bad jokes. And looking forward to talking more in the future. Excited for your hub.
Fantastic. And we appreciate all the DOD have been in the effort that they've been putting into this. It's really been fantastic and forward work looking for government to put this type of attention on this critical problem.